Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Great to be joined once again by the great Paul Bredel. You can find him on Twitter at Paul_Bredel. Paul, it is, as I mentioned, great to be back chatting with you. How the heck have you been, my friend?
I'm excellent, Andy, and same here. Happy to be back talking Packers football with you. We got the bye week behind us and a big second half of the season upcoming.
It is. It is going to be, I think, a massively important one for this Packers team. Obviously, NFC is really, really tough. San Francisco right on their tail. They have an opportunity to gain maybe a little bit of separation this week with a opportunity to beat the Bears, who are not exactly tearing up the league right now. And speaking of which, they just fired, as we're recording this, they just fired offensive coordinator Shane Waldron, which not super unexpected, but still an interesting move for Chicago and certainly an interesting one for Green Bay as we get set for Packers Bears this week.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, as you mentioned, the Bears have, you know, been struggling as of late, hence the move to be made. And, you know, from the Packers perspective, I mean, this is a, we know the Packers position that this is a team that wants to be among the contenders, that wants to, you know, that has Super Bowl aspirations. And going into a game against the Chicago Bears who are struggling, you're coming off your bye. You want to be that top contender within the NFC. To me, this is one of those games where you got to go out and show that in this one, right? Like the Bears are, their season is on the ropes right now. So if you want to be that team that, you know, feels that they are one of the better teams in the league, this is one of those instances where you really got to go in and show it again against an opponent who's, like I said, on the ropes right now.
Yeah, I think so too. And hopefully there's nothing too, you know, fancy that a new offensive coordinator can bring to the table in a week. I'm not super concerned about it. That's a Bears offense that this past week, just and really through the entire season so far, is looked completely disjointed and has shown no real signs of putting it together. Obviously, working with a rookie quarterback that's kind of struggled through this point. So my hope for Green Bay, we'll talk about this obviously a little bit more at the end as we kind of preview this game a little bit more, but just don't give them room to breathe. Don't give them hope early in this game. I think it's going to be paramount that Green Bay doesn't have any rust coming off the bye, doesn't have those self-inflicted wounds to start the game. And if they can do that and just kind of put the foot on the gas early, I feel very confident that they can kind of keep this Bears offense, just Bears team in general, in check a lot more.
Yeah, well said.
Let's get to some of the things that I wanted to go over with you coming off of the bye week and some great things that you've been writing about over at ESPN Lacrosse. And one of the most recent things you wrote about was the consistency of this team and how we've talked about the mistakes and just sort of the inefficiencies of this team. I think it's been a team through the first half of the season that, well, 6-3 and you feel comfortable overall with the record. Inconsistency has been sort of the story of the season, and we're hoping, and I know what you wrote about, is that consistency is going to be the story of the second half of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And Brian Gutekunst was asked last Tuesday, you know, point blank, what do you want to see from this team during the second half? And consistency and being better in specific situational football. And for me, when I hear situational football and looking at this Packers team, big thing that comes to mind is the red zone. I forget what their exact ranking is in terms of success rate, but I think it's like 29th or 30th. Like, they have really struggled in that part of the field, and the red zone issues, the overall consistency. Again, we to a degree, we're talking about this weekly because it is reoccurring, but it goes back to those self-inflicted mistakes that you mentioned. Off-target throws, drops, interceptions, penalties. Penalties are a huge one. And like we've talked about before, those situations are when you can't get out of your own way, you put yourself behind the sticks, second and long, third and longs. And regardless of how good your offense is, if you're consistently living in those down and distances where the defense has the advantage, coverage standpoint, pass rush can pin its ears back, you can't lean on the run game as heavily because you're in those predictable passing situations. That's a tough way to live on a consistent basis. And that's why we see this up and down play from this Packers offense. And, you know, with the penalty specifically, like, we know the answer to the problem, right? It's like you go back, going back to school, you know, you're going through your math book. The answer is in the back, but you got to show your work to get credit. We know the answer is we got to commit fewer penalties, but
right.
How do the Packers go about doing that? Obviously is the big question that they're still trying to solve at this point. And I think some of it, Sean Ryan had talked about this after the Lions game. I think some of it is players trying to do too much, trying to make that big play, trying to overextend themselves rather than, all right, here's my responsibility on this play. Go and execute at the best level that you can and know that the players, your teammates around you are going to do that. And when it comes to, I wrote about this in a different article, when it comes to Jordan Love's interceptions, I think to a degree we're seeing someone who's trying to do too much in certain instances, right? Like that pick six against Detroit. It's end of the half. It's a big situation. You're trying to spark your offense. You're trying to make something happen to get into scoring range. And you do too much. You make a decision that you shouldn't because you're trying to make the big play. And so I think that's kind of, for me, as we look for, all right, what's the solution to fewer penalties, fewer mistakes? I think it's playing within the scope of the play, what your responsibility is, and not trying to do too much.
I could not agree more. It's the simple, stupid cliche. Mm-hmm. Do your 111th. Don't try to do too much. Do your responsibility. As Bill Belichick would say, just do your job. And I think if everyone just kind of does that and takes care of their own business and doesn't try to overextend themselves and doesn't try to get ahead of themselves and maybe commit that penalty, Green Bay is going to be just fine. They're, I think, have the ability to be a super efficient team. We just haven't seen it with, again, that key word, any level of consistency. And going back to the stat that you brought up, 29th in red zone percentage, 47.06% of the time that they are getting into the red zone, they are scoring a touchdown. So under half of the time that they get inside the 20, they're actually scoring a touchdown, which again, at 29th in the league, the only teams worse, the Rams, the Cowboys, and the Giants, not exactly company that you want to be keeping. Interestingly enough, San Francisco right there with them, just one spot ahead. But either way, this to me is one of the underrated, less talked about issues that Green Bay really, really has to clean up in the second half of the season. Because just for comparison's sake, again, Green Bay, 47.06%. Baltimore first in the league at 76%, basically 30% more of the time when they get in the red zone, they're scoring touchdowns. And it's not like it's a completely one-off. Cincinnati is at 72.4% that they're scoring touchdowns when they get in the red zone. So it's not like there's just this one complete outlier. That is a night and day difference. And it's also not exactly like Green Bay's field goal unit is the most reliable in the world through the course of the season. So being able to turn some of those field goal opportunities into raw, unadulterated 7-point scores, like that's what you need to see. And it's really been something that has been costing them through the course of the first half of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if we want to take the glass half full look at this, like even with their red zone struggles, I think they're still top 10 in scoring going into week 11 here. So just shows the very boom and bust nature of this offense. They can score as quickly, as efficiently as any team in the NFL, but sustaining drives, a lot of short possessions, a lot of quick punts, obviously is what they have to overcome. And again, to a degree, I'm being a bit repetitive here, but it goes back to cleaning up the self-inflicted errors and just being more sound all around. And the talents there, we saw them overcome, obviously, what was a very, very rough start to the season last year. So they know how to do it. They've been in this situation. And again, I think another positive is we've seen this team this season overcome their own self-inflicted errors. We've seen them win in a variety of ways. And banking those reps in those situations, overcoming some adversity, I think is going to be really valuable down the stretch.
And Green Bay 9th in points per game at 25.6, even with those red zone struggles, even with basically 2.5 games of a backup quarterback, they're not struggling to put up points in any major way. But this is where we talked about, like where we think this team can be kind of a juggernaut on offense. Take some of those missed field goals and those field goal opportunities, even the ones that you made, and turn those into touchdowns, and you're going to be closer to 30 points per game, which is going to put you right towards the top of that list. Where again, Baltimore, you want to talk about their red zone offense, they lead the league in scoring at 31.8, in large part due to the fact that they're converting those red zone opportunities into touchdowns. So that's going to be a key to the Packers in the second half of this year. I've not had the opportunity to talk to you too much, I think at all, really, since the Preston Smith trade. Obviously, the Preston Smith trade has been broken down ad nauseum at this point, but I do want to ask you, this does open up some real opportunities at that defensive end position opposite Rashawn Gary and just kind of with the rotation in general. How do you see this rotation playing out, and what does this opportunity provide for guys like an Aaron Mosby, a Bretton Cox, a Kingsley Enagbare, and a Lucas Van Ness?
Yeah, I mean, even with Smith's snap count decreasing during these last few weeks, there's still 25-ish snaps that now have to be, you know, divided up amongst that group. And, you know, obviously Enagbare, Van Ness are going to play a role in absorbing that workload, but they're already a pretty steady part of the rotation. There's only so much that you can add to their plate at this time. So obviously I think the larger chunk of that 25 is going to be divided up amongst Mosby and Cox, who Brian Gutekunst has spoken very, very highly of. Obviously, with both of them making the 53-man roster, the Packers going heavy along the defensive line. That goes to show the impression that they made over the summer. But Gutekunst has talked about how they've continued to see that progression from each of them coming into the season. And when it comes to what they can bring to the table, I remember before the season started, Gutekunst, one of the comments he made about Mosby was his versatility. And keep in mind, Mosby is relatively new to the defensive end position. I think going back to college, he was actually a safety and then a linebacker. And then now as he's gotten to the NFL, more defensive, I think he's quickly moving closer to the line of scrimmage.
He's going to be a nose tackle by next year. Right? Keep adding that weight.
And Ine Barry even said on Monday that in terms of speed in that edge rusher room, Mosby brings the most juice in that regard. He's the fastest guy at that position group for this team. So you have that speed, you have that versatility that he brings, and I think that gives the Packers options in terms of how they're going to utilize him. And then with Brenton Cox, I still remember during training camp this year, it was just the shoulder pads were on, and I can't remember who he was going up against. It might have been like Caleb Jones or Kadeem Telfort, but man, the power, the violent hands that he has as a pass rusher is really, when you're up close and at that field level watching him, it's impressive. It is staggering. And that pass rush element, like him coming out of Miami, that's what he brought to the table. And now you get him in a system where, again, as we've talked about during the offseason, it's get off the ball, go get after the quarterback. I think that suits him really well. So you can see from a skill set standpoint with each of these players where opportunities might come from, why Brian Gutekunst feels confidence in Mosby and Cox being able to be added to that defensive end rotation. But obviously they're both inexperienced players. They're going to have to go out and show that they can make that impact. But if I had to guess right now, again, Enagbari, Van Ness, they're going to eat up some of those 20-25 snaps that are available. I think Mosby's probably going to have the larger workload just given how he's been utilized earlier in the season and getting a few opportunities. But it's going to be a group effort, right? This isn't you pick out one player and go, all right, this person has to make up Preston Smith snaps, Preston Smith's production. Like, it is going to have to be a group effort from this defensive end position. As we talk about the second half of the season and where this group, this Packers team as a whole has to improve, the consistency, the penalties, all that, but the pass rush, the four-man pass rush has to get better during the second half of the season if this defense as a group is going to reach its ceiling this season.
We made it. Green Bay versus Chicago, coming off the bye week, one of the best rivalries in all of sports, and Green Bay looking to start the second half of the season strong. Cannot wait for this one. And just like Green Bay is ready to get back in the action, it's also time for you to get back in the action with Prize Picks. And with Prize Picks, you can win up to 100 times your money with as few as 4 correct picks. And right now, you can sign up and get $50 instantly when you play $5. You do not even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It is guaranteed. Simply put, Prize Picks is the best way to win real money this football season. Which players are going off? Which ones aren't? Make your picks in less than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks. This week, I'm going with Christian Watson to explode versus Chicago and Chicago to have to settle for a multitude of field goals against this Green Bay defense. The best part is that there are a ton of options out there for you to choose from. So what are you waiting for? Download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after your first $5 play. Prize Picks. Run your game. There's absolutely nothing like seeing a football game live, and that's even more so in Green Bay than in any other city or in any other stadium. I had the absolute best time going to the Houston game earlier this year as my son got to see his first regular season game live, and let me just tell you, it was absolutely perfect. And there's no question about it. The best and easiest way to get tickets is on GameTime. GameTime has a new feature called GameTime Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. When I started using GameTime, it was so easy to use, and GameTime filtered out all the extra garbage to show me just the incredible deals that they had on all the great seats. It was simple, efficient, and unbelievably easy to use. It was also super helpful seeing the seat views before buying. And enough with all the false advertising on pricing. Turn on all-in pricing on GameTime to see the total upfront cost with no surprise fees at checkout. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with GameTime. Download the GameTime app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY for $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time.
It became a meme at times, but one of the other things that Preston Smith did bring to the table was his ability to drop back into coverage. And especially when even Jeff Hafley is bringing some of these unique pressures, sometimes you got to drop some guys. And a lot of times they've been more apt to drop Preston. I do think Aaron Mosby can be somebody who is utilized in that role as well, as somebody who can drop into coverage. And, you know, just with his like experience, like you mentioned, at defensive back and at off ball linebacker, I think that gives him a little bit of a leg up over guys like Brenton Cox, Rashawn Gary, Kingsley Enagbare, and LVN, who have not done that as much. So that could be a way that he gets utilized as well. I'm curious if you've had the opportunity to talk to any of the other players in the locker room, or if you have any feel as to how Preston's departure as a locker room guy could affect this team. We know, you know, the situation on the field where didn't maybe fit perfectly in this 4-3 defense, but how does the departure from the locker room, especially a year after, you know, you already lose Aaron Jones last year, who was a huge locker room guy, any impact here, or is it much ado about nothing?
I mean, he is certainly going to be missed in that locker room. Enagbare on Monday talked about, you know, pregame speeches, postgame speeches, just bringing the juice beforehand. Like a lot of times you'd find Preston Smith, you know, at the center of all of that. And Enagbare mentioned this. I remember talking, this was a year ago now, with Brenton Cox during his rookie year, that Preston to those young players, specifically within that defensive line room, I mean, a mentor for them, both on and off the field. I mean, Enagbare and Cox have both talked about that. So certainly there's a leadership element that, you know, that Smith absolutely brought to this Packers team. And when it comes to, all right, how do you, you know, make up for that departure now? Again, it's a group effort. Rashawn Gary, he's the leader of that defensive end room. You know, more is on his shoulders in that regard. The defensive end room as a whole, I mean, I know they're young players, the other guys that they have in that room, but they're going to have to take on some of that amongst their within team meetings, practices, things like that. And we've seen the Packers rely on that at other, you know, receiver last year, tight end last year. So that isn't exactly outside of the norm for the Packers, but on this team as well, it's going to extend the leadership element beyond just the defensive end room. And Aaron Mosby talked a little bit about this, as did Enagbare on Monday. It's Kenny Clark. It's Jordan Love. It's Josh Jacobs. It's Xavier McKinney, right? So there's going to have to be a little bit more on their plate as well from that leadership standpoint. Again, just because Smith did bring a lot in that regard to this team, and all of those players I just mentioned, they're already doing that. This isn't anything new for those players. I want to be clear about that. But again, there's, you know, with Smith leaving, there's now that element that is going to have to be dispersed amongst others to, you know, replace what he brought in that regard.
Yeah. And I think the huge thing here is, yes, you lost Aaron Jones, and yes, you now lost Preston Smith, but you did gain Josh Jacobs and Xavier McKinney as two guys that are leaders on both sides of the ball. And I think the other thing, I think sometimes, especially if you're a team that's competing and you see the team trade away a player at the deadline, it can definitely have a level of a, you know, connotation to it of like, all right, what are we doing here? But I think when you find out that Preston Smith was the one who asked for the trade, and I'm sure some of the guys kind of knew that in the locker room, You probably feel a degree of different about it, of like, all right, this isn't just Green Bay selling off a player for the heck of it to get a 7th round pick. Like, they did him a favor by getting him to a 3-4 defense. It opens up some opportunities for other guys, and hopefully it's a deal that ends up making sense and working out for both teams. But I think it's a lot easier to explain rather than if Preston was caught off guard by it and is like, what, you're trading me? It was like, no, he requested it. And I think that's an easier story to tell to the rest of the locker room.
Yeah, I think that's a really big part of this as well. And you know, it, the Packers, you know, did right by Preston Smith. You know, it wasn't working out here with the scheme change. They were able to get him on a winning team, a good organization, an opportunity for him to go get snaps. And look, he went out this past Sunday and made some impact plays in that game. So that doesn't go unnoticed amongst the players either. So yeah, like you mentioned, you know, the just kind of the 30,000 foot view, you look at, oh, the veteran, one of the voices in the locker room was traded away. You wonder about the trickle down effect of that, but I don't see that being an issue whatsoever.
No, and I think that's going to be the case, and I think they'll be fine. And this is going to be a team that remains motivated and confident, I think, moving forward. And again, I think just knowing again that Preston asked for it is huge in that situation. I know you wrote an article last week titled "Packers Remain Confident in Depth at Cornerback Position." Again, this is on ESPNLacrosse.com. So my question for you, Paul Bredel, is,
should they be confident in their depth at the corner position? Obviously, we know how important Jaire Alexander is. Like on paper, like going into the year, you're looking at it, you're like, all right, Keyshawn Nixon, they've got Carrington Ballantyne, Eric Stokes, both players who have started before. Corey Ballantyne started games last year and they won and were able to get by with that. Like you look at that on paper, you're like, maybe I don't love it, but I can see where you're going to maybe get enough out of it. And then also you move Javon Bullard into the slot, which kicks Keyshawn Nixon, which basically is like giving you kind of even more depth because you're taking a safety and moving him into one of those primary roles at corner. So it feels like kind of on paper, I can understand it, but I don't know. I'll let you take the floor. Your thoughts on the depth of the cornerback position.
Yeah. So going back to even before the draft, I mean, the confidence that Gutekunst talked about last Tuesday in the cornerback room, like he's been preaching that since, again, before the draft, because I was one of those individuals before the draft where I thought, well, you got these extra picks that gives you more flexibility. I absolutely, you know, I thought within the first three, maybe four rounds that quarterback was going to be a target for them because yeah, on paper, like you said, it looks good, makes sense, but you could also go around that room and poke some holes in it as well. So Gutekunst sharing his confidence in that group after the trade deadline, I really don't think was GM speak because they didn't bring anyone in. That's been a constant message from both him and LaFleur since, again, February, March, before the draft began. And when Alexander's healthy, I absolutely feel that confidence. Again, obviously, we know the player that he is. Keyshawn Nixon is getting more acclimated to the boundary cornerback position, which before he came to Green Bay was actually where he lined up the most defensively during his time with the Raiders. And when we look at maybe where that confidence is coming from, Jeff Hafley talked about two aspects of Nixon's game. It's his willingness to bring the physicality in the run game, take on blockers, make tackles, and his ability in man coverage is something that Hafley talked about as well, where he's steadily improved this season. And then again, you got Javon Bullard in the slot. So if you have that trio out there, I mean, I feel that confidence in that group too. And then you have Stokes or Valentine off the bench to play 5-10 snaps, whatever it might be. And if they're in dime or anything like that, again, I can feel that confidence, but Jaire's missed two games this season. He missed some time last year with injuries as well. And when he's not out there, I mean, things very much change. Eric Stokes is struggling. Valentine, you know, he's just not seeing the snaps. Like unless there's, you know, it took Jaire being out and Evan Williams being out, so Bullard had to go back to safety for Carrington Valentine to see any sort of significant snaps. Yeah. And the reason behind that, I mean, I'm not sure. I have to think with all of the, again, talked about on here before, the flexibility, the adaptability that Jeff Hafley has shown this season as a defensive coordinator and willingness to move guys around, it has to go back to matchups or fit and what they're asking those guys to do. I'm not really sure, but there's something there where they feel that Eric Stokes for the matchup, what they want to comp, whatever it might be, gives them a better chance. So again, the depth does have me, you know, I'm not in that same confidence as Brian Gutekunst, but again, if you have Jaire out there, it's a completely different game. And we want to, you know, kind of go full circle here and talk about, all right, what can help this cornerback room? He didn't make an addition, the pass rush. I mean, that's a cornerback's best friend. You get home, get after the quarterback consistently. That's a game changer. It's Aaron throws, it's less time in coverage. We know all that stuff. So the pass rush picking up over the second half of the season is going to be really, really important when it comes to helping out this cornerback room. And last thing I'll say on this in regards to the trade deadline, I mean, Gutekunst talked about it. It was pretty quiet. There just wasn't a ton of options out there. And I think only two cornerbacks ended up being traded. And yeah, Marshawn Lattimore coming to Green Bay, that'd be fun. It'd be a great conversation to have. But if you look at what Washington gave up, all those draft picks, we know how valuable that is to Green Bay. Yeah. You look at Lattimore's contract beyond this season, like that, the recipe just wasn't there for that. Nothing about that said.
And his injury history too. Yes, it's exactly the same thing we talk about with Jaire, right? So yeah, I agree.
Nothing about that said, oh, the Packers are going to be in on this. And then because they do value their depth, again, right or wrong, we'll see how it plays out. You know, I don't know that like Tre'Davious White was ever going to be on their radar when they have Valentine and Stokes. So the trade deadline, I just don't think was ever going to be much of an option for them because of those reasons.
It's an interesting setup. And really, we can even go back to the trade deadline last year that Goody was willing to trade Rasul Douglas because he wanted to open up playing time for Eric Stokes and Carrington Valentine so that they could get that playing time and they could make an evaluation on Stokes and that they could make, get Valentine more playing time and more responsibility. So hopefully he could continue to grow as a corner. They felt this way kind of for a while now. It's as I look at it, I actually feel pretty darn comfortable right now with Jair and Nixon on the outside, Bullard in the slot, Williams and McKinney at safety. I feel like that is a more than worthy starting caliber defensive backfield in the NFL. I don't think there's much weakness there. I know, again, people will feel a certain way about Nixon, but to your point, what he does as a tackler, as a run defender, as an aggressive, willing-minded player, I don't have a major issue with that. I think the first thing is if you lose Jair, then it looks just a night and day difference. And you can certainly make the argument, and I would understand this to some extent, of like, yeah, if you lose a really good player on your team, it's not gonna be the same. Like you're counting on your Jordan Loves, your Josh Jacobs, your Jair Alexanders, your Jaden Reeds, your Zach Toms, your Rashawn Gary's, like you're counting on those guys being out there. And yeah, if they're gone, it's not gonna feel the same. So to some extent, I get that. So again, starting wise, I feel it. Like I feel like they've got the group. If Jair goes down, I feel like they're in trouble. But the one thing for me is just the one simple change. If Nixon goes inside or if one of those guys goes down, to just put Valentine in front of Stokes. And I feel like it feels a whole lot different. And I have a little bit more faith in Valentine than I do in Stokes. So I don't think it's dire. I don't think it's this, oh my God, they're in complete no man's land at defensive back. But I do feel like Jair is the linchpin. And I do feel like they maybe just need to change up the order of operations a little bit at that spot.
Yeah, it feels like we're beyond that tipping point, right? Like if you do need to rely on Stokes or Valentine, again, we're over halfway through the season. We're beyond any sort of small sample size. Like this Packers team right now is who they are. The performance that we're seeing on the field from individual players, you know, doesn't mean that, you know, that's who they are right now in this season. And so if things aren't working out, a change in terms of Valentine over Stokes, if that's what's called for on the field, you think would just be made just to at least try something different, right?
Yeah, I would think so. I've been certainly saying it, and I it's like one of those things. Every year there seems to be one decision that the team makes, and all it's not a LaFleur thing. It's like it every year for the history throughout the history of the Packers, there's always that one guy starting. And we're like, what is going? Like, why is this happening? Why is that one? And it just feels like Stokes is kind of that guy this year. I want to jump to the offensive line really quick. Just got a couple quick ones here. The importance of Josh Myers, I thought, was emphasized last week a little bit when we saw some of the snap issues and things like that. We heard from Matt Schneidman. It sounds like he will likely be good to go this week, or at least Matt LaFleur is optimistic about it. And then I also wanted to get your thoughts on Jordan Morgan making his first start in the NFL. So just those two kind of really quick along the offensive line.
Yeah, anytime Josh Myers is brought up, I know the play has been up and down throughout his career. And obviously, at the end of the day, that's what matters. How are you performing on Sundays? Yep. But I always feel in these Josh Myers conversations, I got to bring up the pre-snap and the off-field stuff, because the Packers, and we heard Matt LaFleur talk glowingly about Myers, they really, 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 really value what he brings in that regard. I mean, Matt LaFleur called him the driver of the ship. Said he's one of the heart and soul kind of guys of a football team. And where that comes from is, one, his availability. I mean, Josh Myers doesn't miss football games. And that continuity along the offensive line within your offense for the guy who's driving the ship, obviously a really important element. There's the pre-snap component, his ability to identify and communicate protections to the rest of the blockers, an area where he excels, an area where the Packers really value him, his rapport with Jordan Love. And last season in particular, I think it was Adam Stenovich or might have been LaFleur, but they had talked about within that offensive line room that Josh Myers a year ago at this time was really emerging as one of the leaders, one of the voices within that offensive line group. So again, ultimately what matters at the end of the day, how are you performing on Sundays? I get it, but there are so many other elements to what Josh Myers brings to this team, especially at the center position, especially with everything that comes from a protection standpoint, a communication standpoint, pre-snap. So obviously getting him back is big, big, big for this Packers team. As far as Jordan Morgan's performance go, I think as kind of what we've seen right throughout the season up to this point, there were the flashes, the moments where you go, okay, this is what the Packers see. Cause we hear Adam Stenovich talk about his potential, his upside. It's tremendous. And they want to help him get there by giving him reps. But again, you also saw a rookie who's had up and down playing time because of injuries, who's making a position change from tackle to guard. I did think there might have been a little extra comfortability for him just being back on that left side, at least in this game. But honestly, my big takeaway was, because we hear how highly Stanovich in particular talks about Morgan and his potential and wanting to get him there, the fact that the rotation, the pendulum has swung so heavily in Sean Ryan's favor, I think speaks to how well Sean Ryan is playing.
Right? Yeah.
Because the Packers, it's been clear since day one, like since OTAs, they want Jordan Morgan a part of that starting five. And for various reasons, Ryan's play, injuries, all that stuff hasn't happened up to this point. Again, still that rotation, as we all know. But I think the fact that the pendulum has swung so heavily in Ryan's direction when in that rotation, I think, again, speaks to his play, his improvement, the strides that he's made this season.
I think so too. I think it's been a really big development. I think it's one that's flown under the radar. He's been a little bit inconsistent. Like, it's really weird. Like, he'll have a really great game, then he'll have a poor game, and then he'll have a couple of great games, and then it's like kind of bad. It's like, it's a little bit up and down. Whereas like Meyer's always in his career is like in the game, you'll get like up and down in the game, and like you'll see some great stuff and some inconsistent stuff. And then like Ryan is like the opposite, where you like go like two games where he looks awesome, and then there's a game where you're just like, what the heck was that? But I still really like overall what I've been seeing from Sean Ryan. I do think it has been a significant step in the positive direction. Just going back to Meyer's for a second, gut feel right now, Meyer's back in 2025, or does he leave in free agency?
Gosh, that's a great question. I've actually gone back and forth on this myself. You know, I'm gonna pick that he stays. I think those, everything that I just mentioned, I think that is going to be kind of the, you know, a big factor in the Packers' decision.
I think it's going to come down to what salary he's demanding. It's more in that Connor Williams sort of range. Now Williams is coming off the injury, but it was more of a reasonable deal. I think, yeah, you probably feel good about bringing him back and having that offensive line depth. I think if it's in that, even John Runyon Jr., I know he was a guard, but 10 mil per year, even Lloyd Cushenberry, who was closer to like 12, 13 mil per year. I think that to me is probably a little bit exorbitant. And I think maybe you trust Jacob Monk or Elton Jenkins, Zach Tom, Sean Ryan, one of those guys that maybe you can kick inside and be that center moving forward. And you do have options there. Plus you have a whole draft and free agency too. So it's going to be really interesting. I think it's going to come down to, as it usually does, the financial ramifications of bringing him back. Really quick thoughts on Marshawn Lloyd. They open up his 21-day window. How does he fit back in once he's fully healthy? I think that's a really interesting topic to discuss.
I'm not sure.
Me too. I don't know.
I mean, Josh Jacobs said on Monday, and we, like, from the first moment of OTAs, when he gets that carry, like, you can't teach the speed, the ability to change directions that Marshawn Lloyd has. But I feel like at this point in the season, because of the missed time, not just IR now, but again, two separate injuries during OTAs, during training camp, those are really, really valuable reps in practice time. And I think I've said on here before, he knows the playbook. We know he knows the playbook. But as LaFleur talks about, as other coaches talk about, there's a difference between knowing the playbook and then being able to go out and execute it when, you know, everything's moving at a million miles an hour. And that's just the part of the equation that he hasn't had up to this point. And you look at Emmanuel Wilson, it's been a steady presence. Chris Brooks's role is growing in these coming weeks. And while it looks like the Packers are going to have four running backs on the 53-man roster, I don't know that you keep four running backs active on Sundays, on game day. Because of that speed, because of that juice that he brings, yeah, there's opportunities where you could carve out a specific role for him to get him some of those reps. But again, that requires to keep four running backs, or you would have to inactive, Brooks or Wilson would have to be inactive, and just the way that those guys are playing, the way they've been utilized, I just don't see that being a part of the equation. At least right now, it feels like this might end up being more of kind of like a red shirt type of year for Marshawn Lloyd to, you know, get reacclimated back onto the practice field, get those practice reps at least, and then, you know, move forward from there. But, you know, the Packers do have options when it comes to the running back position, but because of how well those other guys are playing and the variety of roles they can fill, I'm having a hard time seeing where Lloyd fits in right now.
I do feel like pass pro is going to be the differentiator here, where you feel really great with
what Chris Brooks is bringing in pass pro. Emmanuel Wilson's improved at it greatly. And Marshawn Lloyd, definitely the biggest question mark when it comes to pass pro. So if he wants to get back on the field and he wants to make that impact, I think that's going to be one of the things that he shows, that not only just the ability to pick it up, but the knowledge of who to pick up, when to pick up, and all those sort of things that comes with the territory as well. So I think that's going to be super important to him getting on the field and having an opportunity to make some of those impact plays that I think we all believe he is more than capable of. Last but not least, Packers Bears rivalry week. I cannot say rivalry this week, Paul. I don't know what's wrong with me, but rivalry week coming up should be a really fun game. What are you looking forward to in this one?
I'm going to stick with the theme that I've had here all along, the pass rush. I mean, the Bears are coming off a game. I know they had four of their five offensive line starters
were
out last week, and I think it was 8-9 sacks that they gave up. This needs to be a game where the Packers pass rush gets off on the right foot, where they go, they take advantage of the matchup, they wreak havoc on in the backfield, and because that just has a massive trickle down effect. I mean, we know sacks are great, we know pressures are great, but when you're getting home with four, I mean, that just gives so much flexibility to Halfley as a play caller, to the secondary with an additional guy able to be back there. So that's the big thing for me. Pass rush, we know, needs to pick it up in the second half of the season. Matchup wise, on paper, it looks like the opportunity is going to be there this week. So you want to see them go out there and have that kind of success.
Bears obviously make the change at offensive coordinator. I don't care who the offensive coordinator is. If you can't protect up front, especially for a rookie QB, it doesn't matter. You can call any play that you want. And if you can't block, you can't block it up to run the football. You can't pass protect in your passing plays. You can't go play action because you can't do the long developing plays because your offensive line can't block it as long. It all goes out the window. It doesn't matter. There's no There's no play call that you can make that makes up for the deficiency of poor offensive line play. They are massively beat up front. Nate Davis, their guard, went out in pregame warmups with a back injury last week. Tevin Jenkins went out in the game, did not return to the game. And like you said, there's already like three or four guys missing from that Bears offensive line group. So that has to be one. When we talk about, and you brought it up, the LVNs, Rashawn Gary's, Kenny Clark's, Devontae Wyatt's, Enigbaris, all Aaron Mosby, all of them, they have to find a way to make an impact in this game and not make it so that Chicago gets any sort of foothold. If you do that, again, this team is begging you to like get ahead so that they can just fold and just cash in another game and, you know, get closer and closer to the offseason. Just don't give them that hope early. And I really like Green Bay's chances. I know they were 6.5-point favorites to open. I haven't looked at it recently, but this has just got to be one of those that Green Bay finds a way to take care of business in, and hopefully in a significant way, not just like the Bears hanging around through the majority of it.
Yeah, well said.
All right, Paul. Appreciate you so freaking much as always. Where can we find all of your incredible work and follow you on social media?
Thank you, Andy. I appreciate you having me on. Follow me on Twitter at @Paul_Brettle. Find all my work over at ESPNthecross.com.
You can find him again, @Paul_Brettle. Make sure to follow him. He's the absolute best. You can find me at @AndyHermanNFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for Paul and I today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.